Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. It is Friday, August 20th. I'm Ken, reading from today's Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now begin with our piece from Above the Fold, and the headlines are Grassley Backs Vaccinations. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley told University of Dubuque students Thursday that he supported businesses' right to mandate staff vaccinations and that tackling medical and other misinformation online would take a bipartisan effort. The longtime Republican Iowa senator visited the university to meet with students in the Physician Assistant Master's Degree program. During the hour-long question and answer session with students and staff, several members of the 70-person crowd asked about possible next steps in the federal government's response to COVID-19. Grassley said policymakers have learned a lot since the pandemic started and that he did not think federal officials should be making blanket decisions. "We've learned that this country's population is so different from coast to coast and the interior that we're so geographically vast that there's been a conclusion to leave more of it to the governors or the states," he said. "I don't think I would go for a mandate from the federal government that everybody be vaccinated. I would say to people, you need to be vaccinated. I've been vaccinated. I've had COVID. I don't want to have it again. Take the necessary precautions." Grassley also recalled a recent conversation with a constituent upset that her husband, after 30 years with his company, was told to receive a COVID-19 vaccination or lose his job. "I said, I think the company has the right to that," he said. "According to every court decision so far, if your employer wants you to be vaccinated, you've got to be vaccinated. We ask a Congress might not mandate vaccinations, but we're not going to step in and say private industry can't make their people be vaccinated." The constituents' worries about the vaccines did not dissuade Grassley. "Right now, I don't think they're legitimate concerns, except it does affect a small percentage of the people with complications from getting vaccines," he said. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and local, state, and federal health authorities continue to vouch that the vaccines are safe and effective. Recently, about 200 healthcare providers representing 12 Dubuque County medical organizations issued a message in support of residents getting vaccinated. On Thursday, Physician Assistant Program Assistant Professor Tanya Kirker asked what Grassley could do to combat misinformation, especially medical, on social media. "One of the most difficult things about being a healthcare provider today is dealing with the social media giants and misinformation," she said. "I feel like I spend half my time talking to patients, helping them sort out what's real and what's not." Grassley said the issue is so pronounced that many lawmakers are discussing it, but they remain divided on what should be done. "It's just coming to a head this Congress," he said. "Some of it deals from a conservative point of view with censorship and from a liberal point of view, just to take away the misinformation. We also have conservative and liberal groups of senators and congressmen who think you shouldn't do anything. You have another conservative and liberal group that I would probably fall into that thinks you have to do something." Physician assistant student Darian Curry referenced Grassley's opposition to a single-payer insurance system such as Medicare for All, relating problems that her grandparents have had. "They've both been Medicare beneficiaries, but have had to neglect a lot of their own medical needs out of financial necessity," Curry said, recalling that they needed supplemental insurance for an operation and them not being able to afford hearing aids and dentures not covered by Medicare. The current system is failing many seniors in this country, like my grandparents. So I wonder how you plan to help the average Iowa senior who can't afford the medical care that they need despite having those insurances. Grassley offered his leadership in 2003 to add prescription drug coverage under Medicare, where it had not been covered since the program's creation in 1965, as proof that he could accept changing the federal programs. So I'm open to looking at those things. Those are legitimate things to add into Medicare, he said. But we've got to get Republicans and Democrats, who are very difficult to get sat down on Medicare and Social Security, to work in a bipartisan way with everything on the table. Increases in taxes, some changes in benefits. You use your imagination. But Grassley said he opposed the federal government having much of a hand in health care in general, including single-payer programs. He said countries that have taken that path tend to ration health care to the detriment of elderly populations. Former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer, one of the Democrats running for Grassley's seat in 2022, critiqued the senator's record on health insurance. Senator Chuck Grassley has voted 12 times to roll back the Affordable Care Act and to allow insurance companies to take away health care coverage of Iowans who have cancer, diabetes, or other pre-existing conditions, she said in an emailed response. If he had the chance, he'd do it again. Iowans deserve the truth and deserve better. Grassley has declined to announce until this fall whether he will run for re-election in 2022. And now we continue with our center front page piece, and it's preceded by a large picture of a gentleman with a red shirt and kind of light tan or whitish khakis speaking to what appeared to be a group of teachers. And the caption reads, Greg Lehman, principal at Thomas Jefferson Middle School, speaks to staff at the school last week. And our article is, New Principals Take Reins. Dubuque County's newest school principals are preparing for their students to arrive on campus in the coming days. Dubuque Community Schools will hold its first day of classes for the 2021-22 school year on Monday, August 23rd, with a new principal at the helm of Thomas Jefferson Middle School. In Western Dubuque Community School District, Dyersville Elementary School has a new principal this fall. Aquin Catholic School in Cascade and LaSalle Catholic School in Holy Cross also have new leaders. The Telegraph Herald spoke with Dubuque County's newest principals about their strengths as administrators and their visions for their schools. Greg Lehman, from the school, Thomas Jefferson Middle School in Dubuque. He is succeeding Kelly Maloney, who retired at the end of last school year. The background, Lehman is entering his 22nd year at Jefferson. He spent the first 6 years as a science teacher, then the past 15 as an assistant principal. Before coming to Jefferson, he worked in the River Ridge District in Hanover, Illinois. Strengths as an administrator? Lehman said he values collaborative leadership, noting that Jefferson has a guiding coalition of administrators and staff that will focus on teaching practices that can be used for all students. He also believes his long tenure at Jefferson and the connections he has formed with families will serve him well. From that connection, they have that sense of belonging, Lehman said. They know what I'm about. They know I am a trusted adult in the building they can come to. Vision for the school. Lehman said he wants to continue fostering community at the school so it is a welcoming, safe place for students. That includes a focus on academics and students' social, emotional well-being and how educators can support families inside and outside of school. Next, we have Jenny Hillebrand, school, Dyersville Elementary, succeeding Linda Martin, who resigned to take a job in Dubuque Community Schools. Her background? Hillebrand has worked in the Western Dubuque Community School District for 20 years, spending 10 years teaching preschool and 3 years teaching first grade. She has been an instructional coach at Dyersville for the past 7 years. Strengths as an administrator, Hillebrand said she believes in collaboration and growing leaders in her staff and students. She also has a strong sense of community and seeks to make decisions based on what is best for kids. Vision for the school? Hillebrand's foremost goal is to create a safe, fun environment in which students can excel. She also looks forward to rebuilding a sense of community after the COVID-19 pandemic forced numerous changes to school practices. COVID hurt even the sense of community a little bit because we had to social distance, we couldn't get classrooms together, and we didn't do our large assemblies as a whole school, she said. Next, Laura Herbers. Her school, Aquin Catholic School in Cascade. She's succeeding Vicki Palmer, who left at the end of last school year. Her background? Herbers most recently spent 3 years as principal of Sacred Heart Catholic School in Monticello, Iowa. She previously taught at Archbishop Hennessy Catholic School in Petersburg, Iowa, for 9 years, and then spent 2 years on the school's administrative team. Strengths as an administrator, Herbers said 2 of her strong suits are building relationships and communicating with families and staff. She said Aquin's family atmosphere makes relationship building particularly important, and she seeks to keep families up to speed on what is happening at school. Her vision for the school? In her first year at Aquin, Herbers intends to get a strong understanding of the school's day-to-day operations, which will give her a good idea of how she can work with the board, staff, and parents to better the school. The tone of the school, I would like to be a faith-filled, productive environment where we can feel, we can see, we can experience kindness and love for one another each and every day, Herbers said. Brenda Lansing, her school, LaSalle Catholic School in Holy Cross. She's succeeding Susan Hucker, who left to become principal of Sacred Heart in Monticello. Her background? Lansing most recently was a public elementary school principal in New Hampton, Iowa for 7 years. She previously worked as a Catholic school principal in Sioux City, Iowa, and as a teacher in South Dakota. Her strengths as an administrator, Lansing said she is passionate about building relationships with students and faculty. She also has strong organizational skills, which she said helps keep school's operations running smoothly. Her vision for the school? Lansing said she seeks to help students enjoy school, giving them a passion to learn and helping them see why learning is important. She also seeks to grow enrollment at LaSalle, which currently has 63 students for the coming school year, up from 48 last year. The possibility is definitely here to have more kids, so I want to keep that going and get out there and spread the news of what a great school this is and what a good faculty this is, because they definitely have a good thing going here, Lansing said. Our third and final front page piece, City considers more parkland development. Future land acquisitions and the development of a long untouched Dubuque Park were listed as potential projects by Dubuque City staff in a recent update to the City Council. Council members this week reviewed an updated 5-year plan detailing the city's intended use of funds from the Resource Enhancement and Protection Program, which is managed by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and listing potential major projects for the next 5 fiscal years. Potential projects include park and trail development at Roosevelt Park, which has not been developed since the early 1990s. Other possible work includes environmental restoration of Eagle Point Park, ecological restoration of Four Mounds Park, and acquisitions of a property near Four Mounds Park, and land at Mines of Spain State Recreation Area. While the projects are not guaranteed to come to fruition, Dubuque Leisure Services Manager Marie Ware said they are listed in the plan as likely candidates for REAP funding that the city could pursue, though other projects could take their place. We have hundreds of different projects that we are looking at, Ware said. There are specific things in these projects that would score well for receiving Resource Enhancement and Protection Program funds. The city's updated five-year plan will be part of a larger Dubuque County five-year REAP plan, providing a large list of projects that municipalities and other governing entities in the county intend to pursue with REAP funding from the DNR. Ware said the city usually applies for REAP funding every year, and though not all grant applications are greenlit by the state, the city has a fairly high success rate in securing funding. "We have a pretty good track record," Ware said. Projects eligible for REAP funding must work toward enhancing and protecting the state's natural and cultural resources. Ware said the city previously has used the funds to acquire additional parkland and restore the natural resources in a number of parks. In fiscal year 2021, the city used REAP funds to conduct environmental restoration work at Four Mounds and Eagle Point Parks. The city intends to apply for a $200,000 REAP grant at the end of August to help pay for the acquisition of a 40.5-acre property from Four Mounds Foundation. City officials have said they intend to use the property to establish a new park that will include a large community garden and swaths of natural habitat to explore. Ware said additional land acquisitions possibly could occur in the future, though they are not guaranteed. The acquisition of land at Mines of Spain and E.B. Lyons Interpretive Center is listed as a project for which the city hopes to use REAP funds in fiscal year 2026. Ware said the city has had an interest in acquiring Mines of Spain land in order to preserve it for residents for several years, but it is not a project city staff members are actively pursuing. "We always have said that if there is an opportunity for any other acquisition in the Mines of Spain recreation area, we would be interested," Ware said. "That is such an important resource for our community." City Council member Danny Sprank, who serves as the Dubuque representative for the Dubuque County REAP Committee, said he's enthusiastic about the projects and initiatives listed in the most recent five-year plan, noting in particular the proposed development of Roosevelt Park, a 207-acre property that has remained undeveloped since the early 1990s. "People have always been wondering what we are going to do with that property," Sprank said. "I would like to see what we can do." Ware said the five-year plan could change in future years as new potential projects are identified, adding that ultimately city staff seeks to pursue projects that are desired by residents, align with city priorities, and have a fair chance of actually receiving funds. We now turn to news from Dubuque, and at the top of the fold, leading our pieces, is third candidate eyes Dubuque Council's at-large seat. A third candidate has put himself in the running for an at-large seat on the Dubuque City Council. Tim Flynn, 51, submitted his filing paperwork on Thursday, joining incumbent Rick Jones and Michaela Freiberger as candidates for the at-large council seat in the November 2 election. With Flynn entering the race as a third candidate, a primary election will be held on October 5th, with the top two vote receivers moving on to the November election. Flynn, a master gardener and landscaper who volunteers at the Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, said he chose to run for Dubuque City Council to give residents more input on the decisions made by the city government. "I'm not a politician, and I have no political ambitions," Flynn said. "My concern is with the city of Dubuque and the people." Flynn, who has previous experience as a nurse aide but now takes care of his daughter, who has partial trisomy 17 mosaicism, said he feels the city council recently has become less representative of the will of Dubuque residents. If elected, he said he would work to ensure that public input is taken into consideration before policy decisions are made. I would go out and talk with people and get a consensus on the issue, Flynn said. Whatever the majority thinks should happen is how I would vote. Flynn said that he would work to ensure that residents are able to express their opinions to him, and he would regularly hold town hall meetings if elected. He said he opposes the recent decision by city council members to increase their annual salary by 7.7%, from $10,300 to $11,100. Flynn said that if elected, he would donate the majority of his salary to local nonprofit organizations. Serving on the city council is a public service, he said. I would donate the money I receive to groups that actually need it. Flynn said he also would support the establishment of term limits for the mayor and city council positions. The Dubuque native also expressed his opposition to any increases in local taxes for residents during the COVID-19 pandemic. The timing is bad, Flynn said. With consumer prices as high as they are, people can't afford to have their taxes raised. Flynn said his decision to support any major infrastructure or downtown development projects the city might pursue ultimately would depend on whether residents condone the initiatives. Contacted on Thursday, Jones said he looks forward to facing Flynn in the upcoming election. We'll have a primary race and find out who wins, Jones said. Freiberger said she believes the addition of more candidates to the local election ultimately is beneficial. It is always good to have voices at the table to uplift what the community is talking about, she said. Our next piece, The Workshop, offers day to play, celebrate. And we have a large picture of a person tossing, it looks like a little ring, a round ring, at bottles. It looks like a little party atmosphere there. And the caption reads, Brett Roth tries the ring toss during the workshop's 60th anniversary party in Galena on Thursday. From Galena. The workshop in Galena typically is a hub of hard work, but on Thursday afternoon, the atmosphere was one of celebration. The nonprofit, which serves adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Joe Davies County, marks its 60th anniversary this month. On Thursday, staff and program participants honored the occasion with an outdoor party featuring music and carnival games. The workshop began in 1961 as a group of parents who wanted more for their children with disabilities, Executive Director Lynn Burning said. It started out as more of a social place for parents to take their child, and then it became educational, and then educational turned into, let's get these guys a paycheck, she said. Today, the workshop contracts with area businesses to provide meaningful work opportunities for adults with disabilities, known as consumers. One of its endeavors is a commercial laundry service. The workshop has about 70 contracts with area establishments to launder bedding, towels, gowns, rugs, and other items. The workshop consumers also provide other services, such as destroying documents, packaging medical supplies, and assembling gift boxes of Galena-related items. Although they work hard, consumers also take time for companionship and leisure. We're not just a workshop that works, Burning said. The people that come here develop friendships. We try to make it educational and fun at the same time. At Thursday's celebration, consumers danced and played games, including a ring toss and a pyramid of cans to be knocked down with beanbags. Dylan Clark of Elizabeth began working in the laundry room at the workshop this month. He said he enjoys his work and the chance to meet people, and Thursday's event was a bonus. I like the parties, he said with a grin, before successfully knocking down three cans. Samantha Evans of Stockton, Illinois, waited for her turn at a nearby game of Plinko. Evans, who packages medical supplies at the workshop, said she likes being around other people and socializing, being nice to others and helping out the staff. In spring 2020, the workshop completed a $1.26 million expansion, adding 7,800 square feet to its facility, including more floor space and a garage. Berning said the additional space proved beneficial during the pandemic, as it allowed consumers and staff to more easily socially distance. For several months last year, consumers did not come into the building due to the pandemic, and staff members completed their jobs until the workshop could safely reopen. The extra room allowed us to open up sooner because we could spread out, she said. As the workshop enters its next decade, staff members are grateful for its many successful years and hopeful for the future. It's for sure a big milestone, said Alyssa Havens, the nonprofit's assistant executive director. We're hoping to be around for many more. Now we turn to the editorial page and the opinions. And we have our editorials that reflect the consensus of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And on Friday, we have our view, the quick takes. Today, happy Friday, we have three smiley faces. Our first one, DRA awarded grants provide needed boost. Nearly 100 local nonprofit organizations received a welcomed financial boost this week, thanks to Dubuque Racing Association. Here's hoping these grant awards also provide an encouraging lift to those groups that do so much in our communities. The DRA Board of Directors on Tuesday approved $1,006,461 in grants for 93 nonprofits. As in years past, the grants went to a wide scope of deserving organizations, from local volunteer fire departments to area schools to arts groups to entities providing food resources for our neighbors and most in need. The grant total is in line with the awards from last year, which were split into two allocations and totaled $1 million. That is notable, given the economic conditions of the past year and a half. The fact that we were able to do this after going through a year in which we were essentially closed for a couple of months, it is a testament to the staff and the team, said DRA Board Chairman Kevin Lynch. It represents a bit of normalcy during a span that has been anything but for the DRA. Dubuque's casinos and the area's nonprofits, many of which have stepped up services more than ever since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Want a quick look at the impressive scope of what those groups do? Visit telegraphherald.com and read the titles of the 93 approved projects. A sampling? Blood services vehicle. Inclusive playground base structure. Firefighter safety water rescue. Diversity for elementary school libraries, and food giveaways, hot breakfasts, and grocery delivery program. The DRA grants will assist these crucial local groups in continuing to make a difference. Our next smiley piece. If you have found yourself thinking, I could do better in recent weeks, months, or years in relation to your local city council or school board, this is your opportunity. With the November 2 election on the horizon, the filing period is underway for Iowa cities that hold primary elections if needed. That includes Dubuque, where the mayoral seat will be on the ballot, as well as three city council seats, one each of the at-large, Ward 1 and Ward 3 positions. The filing period in such cities runs through Thursday, August 26th. Meanwhile, the filing period for cities that do not have primaries, as well as for school board races, runs from Monday, August 23rd to Thursday, September 16th. It's encouraging to see 9 candidates that already have filed to run for the City of Dubuque seats. That's not a commentary by this paper on the performance of the incumbents, necessarily. Rather, we believe a healthy interest among residents in running for office helps lead to stronger, more representative leadership bodies. And contested races provide an opportunity for voters to get a better handle on the stances and approaches of those seeking to hold elected office. So, now's the time. We encourage more residents to step up and run for local seats. And our third and final smiley face? A tip of the cap to the Tri-State Mountain Bike Riders. The nonprofit group, founded in 2015, has made an impressive impact locally in the 6 years since, tapping into an area of interest that was underserved and that many people weren't even aware of. The group has raised more than $500,000 for the construction of mountain bike trails at Chloe Creek Park in Asbury, Iowa, and at Interstate Power Company Forest Preserve and Proving Grounds Recreation Area in the Dubuque area. Those wonderful amenities garnered even more attention from many during the COVID-19 pandemic, as the user of local parks and recreation areas surged. The bike trails gave residents another outlet and opportunity to explore what they enjoy doing outdoors. And the group isn't solely focused on adults. On Monday, the 5th annual Tri-State Mountain Bike Riders Children's Race at Chloe Creek Park drew a record 75 kids ages 12 years old and younger. Thanks to the group for its hard work and efforts to help keep the Tri-State area moving. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken reading from the Friday, August 20th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And I remind you that we are sponsored in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. We now turn to today's obituaries. Frank B. Potter. Frank B. Potter, age 94, of Dubuque and formerly of Zwingle, passed away at 12:30 a.m. Monday, August 16th at Hawkeye Care Center. To celebrate Frank's life, family and friends may visit from 2 until 5 p.m. on Sunday, August 22nd at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. To honor Frank's life, funeral services will be held immediately following the visitation at 5 p.m. on Sunday at Bear Funeral Home, with Pastor Mark Dieter officiating. A private burial with military honors will be held at Assumption Cemetery at a later date. Frank was born February 2, 1927, in Chalcia, Oklahoma, son of Samuel and Harriet Koval Potter. He was a U.S. Army veteran, having served in Korea during World War II. In 2014, he was honored to participate in one of the last honor flights to leave from Dubuque. He married Darlene J. Dieter on September 7, 1948, at St. Mary's Church in Vinton, Iowa. She preceded him in death on April 7, 2017. Frank held many jobs over the years. He was a carpenter, auto mechanic, machinist, and a firefighter with the Dubuque Fire Department, a job he cherished from 1957 to 1991, serving as assistant fire chief training officer for many years. Frank was a devoted family man. He was a caring husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and great-great-grandfather. He always made his grandchildren feel special and never missed a chance to hold them when they were babies. Frank was always very generous with his time and talents and was always willing to help anyone with whatever they needed. He and Darlene loved to host extended friends and family from all over the country. Everyone knew they were always welcome at the Potters. Upon retirement, they traveled the United States in their motorhome. Frank had many hobbies. He was a beekeeper, an avid fisherman, and kept an apple orchard and flower garden. He loved to play games, especially chess, cribbage, pinochle, euchre, and Yahtzee. He enjoyed collecting rocks and polished them for making jewelry and belt buckles. Later in life, he took up bird watching, puzzles, and playing bingo. The family will thankfully receive your support through phone calls, greeting cards, and memorials in Frank's memory, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa. Attention, Frank Potter family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Michael W. Bertling, Cascade. Michael W. Mike Bertling, 58, of Cascade, passed away Monday, August 16th at home in Cascade. He was a lifetime resident of Cascade. Visitation for Mike will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, August 21st at the Rife Funeral Home in Cascade, where a private family service will be held with Reverend Jim Miller presiding. He was born November 8, 1962 in Monticello, the 10th child of John W. Bill and Evelyn Miller Bertling. He received his education at the Western Dubuque Schools in Cascade. On September 3, 2005, he was united in marriage to Sharon Wooler in Temple Hill, Iowa. Mike was a third-shift supervisor at Cascade Lumber Company for 34 years. Mike loved to live life and enjoyed many things: convertible rides, guitar, NASCAR, working on cars, playing a good game of pinochle, gardening, visiting and celebrating with family, his job, traveling, road trips, and mushroom hunting. He had an infectious laugh that will be missed by all. Mike was a loyal friend of many and was always willing to help out. He loved his family immensely. A video tribute may be viewed or online condolences sent to the family at www.rifefuneralhomeinc.com. Anyone wishing to send a memorial may send it to Rife Funeral Home, attention Mike Bertling family, P.O. Box 430, Cascade, Iowa 52033. Edna F. Stark, Galena. Edna Peach F. Gert Stark, 72, loving mother, grandmother, aunt, and cherished sister, passed away peacefully Tuesday, August 17th, surrounded by her family. Friends may gather from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, August 22nd, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. In keeping with her wishes, there will be no services. Cremation rites have been accorded. Burial will be at a later date. She was born March 1, 1949, in Dubuque, Iowa, the daughter of Herbert and Reva Davis Gert. Edna graduated from senior high school with the class of 1968. After high school, she moved to Freeport, Illinois, and was employed by MicroSwitch for 37 years. Edna then worked at Liberty Village until her retirement in 2012. After retirement, she moved to Galena to be closer to all her sisters. In Galena, she lived at Prestwick Apartments and became close to many people there and considered them family. Peach loved her simple life with her family. She was an avid NASCAR, Green Bay Packer, and Chicago White Sox fan. The family would like to thank Drs. Farrell and Herman, physician's assistants Tony Hare, and others. Online condolences may be left at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Saddened by those who leave us, we are also able to rejoice with new ones who join us. And here are the most recent births. Monday, August 16th, Baumhover, Bergmeyer, Nolan Baumhover and Hannah Bergmeyer of Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Wednesday, August 18th, Morrison, Ben and Kayla Morrison of Asbury, a boy at Mercy One. Wiederholt, Daniel and Erica Wiederholt of Lewisburg, Wisconsin, a girl at Southwest Health, Platteville. Thursday, August 19th, Fiedler, Jacob and Megan Fiedler of Dubuque, a boy at Southwest Health. Welcome all of you new arrivals, and may your lives be happy ones. And we do have one nice piece of tri-state news. Class of 1971, split then, but reunited now. Between their sophomore and junior years of high school, students in Dubuque's public high school, class of 1971, were split up. They had grown up together. But in 1970, Hempstead High School opened, and suddenly, friends from across town found themselves studying at different schools. "We say we were taken away," Hempstead graduate Pam Willis said, laughing at a joint reunion picnic on Thursday. Now, 50 years later, they are back together again. The Dubuque Senior High School and Hempstead High School classes of 1971 met in Eagle Point Park in Dubuque for the first half of their 50-year class reunion. The classes also are holding a golf outing, a dinner, and tours of the high schools later this week. The reunion offered old friends the chance to reconnect and reminisce about teachers, dress codes, and pranks. The new Hempstead High School wasn't quite ready for the students' junior year in the fall of 1969, but administrators decided to split the students up for the fall semester anyway. Both the Hempstead and Dubuque senior students spent the first half of their junior year at Dubuque Senior, but they never saw each other. The Dubuque senior students would come in first for their classes, starting early and ending at midday. After a lunch break for the teachers, the Hempstead students would file into Dubuque Senior for their classes. Hempstead graduate Pam Willis said she remembers that during that semester, the students were asked to vote on school colors and mascots. Hempstead graduate Wendy Rene remembers a contest to determine the school song. She entered and her lyrics were chosen. "I was in the band and my mom used to write poetry all the time," she said. She sang her song for a few nearby attendees Thursday after telling the story. "You're just always going to be remembered now," Willis said to Rennie. After that strange semester, Hempstead High School was ready for students and the two groups went their separate ways. Some friend groups were torn apart, but some friendships endured. Sue Brayton Poffenberger, a Hempstead graduate, said that because she was in band her first year of high school, she knew many of the Dubuque senior band members. "Not only was the band split up, sports teams were, too. I was an athlete, and I was upset because we had a real good football team that separated," Hempstead graduate Gary Witherall said. "They separated our talent." One interesting effect of the split for Witherall was that because there were no existing athletic records, he was able to set the school record for discus. "I held the record because I was the only one that did it," Witherall said. "For 1 year, I held the record. It's been beat probably 1,000 times, but at one time, I was the record holder." When it came time to plan the 25th year reunion, organizers decided to hold a joint gathering for both schools. It was the natural choice this time around as well. "We belong together," Willis said. And there is a small little picture inset with a big banner above it. It says, "Welcome Senior/Hempstead Class of 1971. And on the left, there's a big picture of a senior ram. And on the right, the golden green Hempstead Mustang. And it says, "People gather during a joint reunion for the 1971 classes of Dubuque Senior and Hempstead High Schools at Eagle Point Park on Thursday." As your reader, I had the wonderful time and delight of my life, really, teaching at Hempstead from 1972 until my retirement in 2009. I have wonderful, wonderful memories of my time there. There's an additional small piece on the Tri-State page, third doses of vaccines available locally. Two locally based pharmacies are offering third doses of COVID-19 vaccines to people with compromised immune systems. Harding Drug Company and Mercy One Pharmacy locations are offering third doses of vaccines. Harding is offering vaccines produced by Pfizer and Moderna. A press release states that studies suggest people with compromised immune systems do not always build the same level of immunity after vaccination and should receive a third dose at least 4 weeks following an initial two-dose series. Vaccination appointments are available at all Harding locations and can be scheduled online at hardigdrug.com/appointment. Mercy One Pharmacy also is offering third doses of Pfizer vaccine to people with compromised immune systems. Vaccinations are available at any of the 6 Mercy One Pharmacy locations. Appointments can be made by visiting mercyone.org/Dubuque. Well, we do have an interesting piece, as long as we're going down memory lane. 50 years ago, local landmark relocated. This is our Flashback Friday. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the relocation of a Dubuque landmark and the unveiling of Iowa's first pedestrian mall. Erected in 1873 atop a building at 825 Main Street, Dubuque's town clock faced an uncertain future in the late 1960s and early 1970s because urban renewal plans targeted its location for demolition. The landmark would not be demolished. Community members and businesses launched fundraising efforts to preserve the clock, resulting in its relocation upon a concrete pedestal on August 13, 1971, at 7th and Main Streets. The clock became the centerpiece of a vehicle-free plaza that marked Iowa's ongoing pedestrian mall. Pedestrian malls were hallmarks of urban planning beginning in the 1960s. Planners believed that aesthetic improvements could help save declining downtown areas. The Gruen Report, a 32-month study released in 1965, first proposed creating a pedestrian mall for downtown Dubuque, and city officials approved moving the clock from the 800 block of Main Street to its current location in July 1970, providing that a community fundraising drive succeeded in financing the project. By the time the landmark was moved in August 1971, fundraising organizations were only $425 shy of their nearly $69,000 goal. Brief ribbon-cutting ceremonies were held at the clock with Mayor Gaylord Couchman and Guy Birch, Director of Omaha, Nebraska Office of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, participating. Those activities were part of a three-day dedication event that also included a parade along Main Street, a keynote address by George Romney, a U.S. cabinet member, and rock band performances. Romney, the nation's Housing and Urban Development Secretary, was joined by local and state officials, mayors from communities in the tri-state area, and U.S. Senator Jack Miller, Republican, Iowa. Romney described the town clock as a meaningful symbol of a community's pride in itself. Town Clock Plaza remained a pedestrian mall for 31 years. Eventually, calls for reopening Main Street to vehicular traffic from West 5th through 9th Streets led to the City Council voting to dismantle the plaza. The four blocks of Main Street were opened to drivers on July 18, 2002. Now we'll pick up bits and pieces of our area news in brief from throughout the paper. Our first one from Lancaster. Grant County Supervisors recently approved a draft of a telecommuting policy due to the number of county employees that work from home in the past year during the COVID-19 pandemic. The policy states that, quote, authorized county employees can perform assigned work at an employee's approved home location during regularly scheduled work hours that are apart from the central work site but is an allowable alternative work site. It further explains that telecommuting might be appropriate for some employees and not for others, and that it is not an entitlement or a county-wide benefit. The option to participate in the telecommuting program is at management's discretion and on a case-by-case basis. Department heads also can elect not to have their staff participate in the program, and they have the discretion to remove approval of it at any time. The telecommuting arrangement is not to exceed 3 months, at which time the arrangement can be renewed after review. County supervisors expressed concerns about employees using personal computers for county business. County Board Chairman Bob Keeney said it appears that some personal computers are being used. The IT department is installing software to monitor the connection to the Grant County Virtual Private Network, he said. We do have some tablets being used for remote work. On a limited basis, IT is helping staff to install security software if they wish to use smartphones for email and other functions. A Dubuque man linked to a business break-in last year recently was sentenced to two to five years of probation. Brendan Terrence, 21, received a deferred judgment in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to second-degree burglary. With a deferred judgment, if probation and payment obligations are successfully completed, the record of the case is expunged. As part of a plea deal, a charge of possession of drug paraphernalia, Blake P. O'Malley, 19, also was granted a deferred judgment in November for his role in the burglary. He was sentenced to 2 to 5 years of probation for a charge of third-degree burglary. Court documents state that officers received a report of a burglary on June 9, 2020, at Beecher's Beverage, 1691 Asbury Road. Store security video showed a person later identified as O'Malley pull down an exterior camera and break a window in a side door of the business. He took alcohol and tobacco products. Documents state that officers found the getaway vehicle shortly after the burglary at 1820 Loras Boulevard, and the stolen items were inside. Terrence, O'Malley, and two other minors were inside the residence. Terrence told officers that he drove O'Malley to the store, documents state. The City of Dubuque Public Works Department is reducing its customer service phone availability. The hours will shift to 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, effective Monday, August 23rd, according to a press release. The release states that the 1 hour per day reduction will allow staff additional time to respond to voicemail messages and emails. The department's responsibilities include trash and recycling collection, yard waste and food scrap collection, large item trash collections, street maintenance and cleaning, snow and ice control, storm sewer and sanitary sewer maintenance, riverfront maintenance, and traffic lights and signs. Residents also can submit service requests and questions to the department at cityofdubuque.org and through the MyDBQ app. The department's in-person service hours remain 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily at 925 Kerper Court. Call the department at 563-589-4250 or email publicworks@cityofdubuque.org for service questions or more information. Proceeds from an annual car show and swap meet will help a local fire department's efforts to purchase a new truck. Organizers of Mopars on the Mississippi said proceeds from this weekend's event will benefit the Lamont, Iowa Fire Department. The department seeks to purchase a fire truck to replace a current 41-year-old model. A new truck costs approximately Mopars on the Mississippi will be held, it doesn't say the cost, but will be held from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday, August 22nd at Dubuque County Fairgrounds. The cost for car show entries and swap meet sellers is $15. Spectator admission is $3 and free for children younger than 16. Mopars is originally the nickname for the Chrysler Corporation gave to its motor parts division. Over time, it became the term associated with any vintage Dodge, Chrysler, Plymouth, Imperial, or DeSoto, plus Jeeps and AMC vehicles. The show features cars 40 classes of Mopars with more than 300 cars. It also will include more than 50 vendors, live music, food, and beverages. From Galena, a man accused of assaulting a Galena woman with a handgun recently pleaded not guilty. Abe N. Haas, 31, of Cassville, is charged in Joe Davies County Circuit Court with one count each of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, being a felon in possession of a firearm, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and possession of drug paraphernalia, and two counts each of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and domestic battery. Court documents state that police responded to 821 Young Street after a 911 call was placed and located Jackie Smith, listed as a family member of Haas, with bruising and cuts. Police reported determining that Haas struck Smith in the head with a loaded handgun. Documents state that officers searched the residence in which Smith was located and a vehicle that Haas had access to and found firearm ammunition and drug paraphernalia. Haas's next court hearing is set for September 8th. Dubuque Schools Foundation provides more than $9,000 in grants. Foundation for Dubuque Public Schools officials recently awarded more than $9,000 in grants to local educators. 21 Dubuque Community Schools educators received a total of nearly $9,200 through the Judy Chandley Tribute to Teachers Endowment. The classroom grants help fund supplies, equipment, and innovative educational experiences throughout the district, a press release states. Efforts funded with the grants include books for the Audubon Elementary School Book Club, piano keyboards for at Fulton Elementary School, and coding supplies for all of the district's elementary schools. Judy Chandley Tribute for Teachers Endowment grants are funded by the friends and family of the former Eisenhower Elementary School kindergarten teacher who died in 2011. Benefit event to cause travel restrictions Saturday on rural Dubuque County roads. A fundraising event will cause temporary road closures Saturday, August 21st, in portions of rural Dubuque County. A Special Olympics Iowa Side-by-Side UTV benefit ride event will cause temporary travel restrictions on 15 roads in Dubuque County from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., according to a press release from the Dubuque County Road Department. Affected roads are stretches of Habercorn, Balltown, Ridge, Tollgate, Maple, Holy Cross, New Vienna, Bankston Park, Asbury, Lord Mound, Derby Grange, Hales Mill, Burton's Furnace, Durango, and Cheryl Roads. Emergency vehicles will have access during the period of travel restrictions. Special Olympics Iowa officials did not respond Thursday to messages seeking additional information on the event. Well, my friends, you have been listening to my voice, Ken, reading for IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, supported in part by the R.W. Hafer Foundation from DuPaco. And I have been reading from the Friday, August 20th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And until next week at the same time, please have a wonderful weekend. It's supposed to be pretty nice out there, warm, of course, but it's August. But have a nice weekend, get out some fresh air, and enjoy yourselves. Till then, take care. And I'll be back next week with the Telegraph Herald.